Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to a podcast on CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady and this is podcast number 224. Well, after the catastrophic disaster of Tuesday night, we couldn't let another few days go past without a podcast that discussed and dissected the events leading up to us being knocked out of the Champions League for the second time this season, this time by Maribor. However, since those 2 days moved on, and with the benefit of a little bit of perspective, St Anthony and I decided that it should not be a completely and utterly doom-laden disaster of a podcast talking about how dreadful things are, to try and at least find where there might be positives looming on the horizon. And one area we do that is to discuss the impending Europa League draw. And as you will hear, we were discussing it as the games were finishing, so weren't 100% sure what teams were going to be in what pots. So enough from me. This is Harry Brady, and this is him, St Anthony, and I'll speak to you on the other side. You're an embarrassment. Right, I am joined now by St Anthony.
Good evening, Harry. How are you?
I'm okay, all things considered. Since the last time I spoke to you in a podcast, we have been in the Champions League, out of the Champions League, in the Champions League, and back out of the Champions League again. So, do you want to get it all off your chest, be a bit cathartic, and just talk about the Maribor game?
Well, in order to discuss the Maribor game, I think you've got to look at the first leg. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a period in the first leg where we had them in the ropes. If you remember the time where Van Dijk had the header and it struck Johansson in the line.
Yep.
And, you know, a wee bit of, it could even have happened when went in.
They also had the header cleared off the line.
Yeah, and do you know that there was a point during that game, and I said, especially in the first half, where Maribor had made it clear that they were just going to defend for a good part of the game and automatically just give us possession. And I said to my friend that was watching the game, we need to make this count. And I said to him, seriously, I'll be disappointed if you don't win this game tonight, because that team there, for whatever reason, just don't want to come out and play us. So one each sounds like a good score, and it was a good result. Celtic played well. And then we get them back to Parkhead, and then almost the reverse happened. They began to press us. We went back in Marseille, and for the entire first half, we gave them the whole initiative. And for the life of me, I couldn't understand why there's a team here who are technically out of the competition unless they score a goal. They had to score last night, the other night.
Yep.
And we just played into their hands by giving them the initiative in midfield and batting off them. And what we should have done is, especially for the first half hour, was just blitz them as far as we could and press them back into their own penalty area and put the frighteners up them and hopefully get a goal, maybe two goals. And I remember being concerned at half-time, because I said to my pal that I sat with, I said, if I was their manager at half-time, I'd been there saying, this mob are here for the thing. All we need is a goal here and we'll go through. Because Celtic were so nervous, they were so dysfunctional, the whole shape of the team was wrong, that I couldn't see any way that we were going to create anything, certainly not until Chris Commons came on. And then, I have to say, Maribor over the, probably, certainly in the basis of Tuesday night, deserved their win. I mean, they could have scored another goal when they were a goal up. They missed a couple of chances. We missed a couple of chances as well, so it's frustrating. But I think I'm trying not to be too critical of Ronnie Dealer, because it's early days and I think he's got a good vision for what he wants us to be. But I'm desperately disappointed in his tactics the other night. And I'm disappointed also that he couldn't do anything to change the course of the game. His substitutions were poor as well. There was times that he was bringing on one player for another player and it involved three positional changes in the park, which I always think is a bad thing, because if you're going to bring somebody on, bring on light for light. And I'm just very disappointed, because I thought after the first leg we had done not done enough to qualify, certainly, but we'd given ourselves a brilliant chance. And now it's just disappointment.
I, like you, want Ronnie Dyla to be a success, partly because his description of the way he wants Celtic to play football is the way I want Celtic to play football, much faster, much higher up the park.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he wants the players to be fitter. Anybody who's listened to me on podcasts or read me will know that one of my big things is there's no reason why our players can't be the fittest footballers out there. So all of that, great, and so wanted to succeed. I also understand you just need to look at Manchester United. I also understand if you're bringing in a manager to completely change the culture in terms of fitness, diet, tactics, everything, that doesn't happen overnight. So
can I say something there? The problem I've got with Ronnie
is
that any manager that takes over a new club, especially in another, a strange country, because he's obviously not used to the lie of the land here and how the league is, etc. So what you should do is, or what I believe you should do is, you should look at your squad, see what you've got available, and then play the system which best suits the players that you have at your disposal. And then gradually through time, you can make wee changes. You can sell a couple, bring a couple, you know, maybe try and get the message across of what you're trying to achieve. And I just feel that his vision sounds great. As you said there, and I'm in total agreement, I want to see his play further up the park. I want to see his play with pace. I want to see his fitter. But not, that will not happen with the current squad, because you're trying to put square pegs in round holes. And he seems to be an idealist. And I'm just wondering to myself if he's one of these guys that puts his ideals before a pragmatic outlook to do things slowly and carefully over a period. Now, I hate to say this, but I remember years ago when John Barnes took over, and he hadn't even seen any of his team play. He clearly didn't have an idea of what squad he had. And he gave an interview and he says, I want to see play at the Brazilians with 4-2-2-2 formation with the fullbacks attacking like Cafu and Roberto Carlos. And I remember thinking, has he seen Boyd and Mahé play? You can't ask Boyd and Mahé to play like Cafu and Roberto Carlos. Just the same way as you can't ask Lee Griffiths on occasions to go in the right wing when he's left-footed and he's no winger. And he just has so many guys. The whole shape of the team is wrong at the moment. He's playing what I think he would describe as a 4-3-3. And again, if you were going to be a wee bit critical, you would say, well, it's actually 4-5-1. But the crux of the matter is, if you're playing with one up front, you have to have a striker who can play that role. And we don't have any that can do that. And the second thing is, if you're going to have one up front, you need goal-scoring midfield players. Now, you look at Kyle, Beaton, Johansson, Charlie McGrew, they're no goal scorers. They've hardly got a goal between them. And yet, he's persistent playing this formation, and he just does not have the players for it. So I'm not saying that I don't agree that through time, I want to see him, his ideas come to fruition. All I'm saying is that I think he's been a wee bit rash in asking players to play a system which they're clearly not suited for.
You could say exactly the same about Van Gaal at Manchester United.
Yeah, absolutely.
My point being, you don't know what Ronnie Dyla has. This is where I would have defence of Ronnie Dyla in that. But for all we know, Ronnie Dyla's gone for his interview with Celtic and said, "This is my philosophy about the way we play football. This is that."
Mm-hmm.
And the Celtic board have said, "Right, okay, we want you to bring that philosophy in." He may have said, "Well, that's fine, but there's no compromise, because this has got to be a total change. You can't ease this system in, because this is the way I do it, and we will not start off well with this system." Because when he was at Stromstad, I can't remember the league positions, but it went something like fifth, second, first or something like that, so it wasn't an overnight thing. And as I say, this is where my defensive might come in. You don't know if at that point the Celtic board have said, "That's fine. We are all up for a change of culture at our club, and we'll give you the time." And then, when he's arrived at the club, he's then said, "These are the players that need to go. These are the players that I think might be able to change the system. This is that." You don't know if that discussion has happened at the club where he's been told, you just go ahead and need to do it? Because I take your point on board of, if the players, you can't make players play a system they're not capable of.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing, he could then turn around and say, right, okay, well, I cannot go in because no two human beings are the same, no two managers are the same, so I cannot go in and just have the team playing exactly the same way Neil Lennon had it. So there's going to be some change. But I could have been more conservative with my changes. The mm-hmm. only problem with that then is, when do I change the system over? Do I change it over when we're in the middle of the Champions League group stages?
Well, let me make a point to you. Chris Commons isn't the fastest guy.
No.
His mobility is not the greatest. But see, without Chris Commons in that team, there's not 1 ounce of creativity or guile. And it was noticeable the other night that it was only when Chris Commons came on did the midfield start to link with the forwards, and Stokes sort of sprang to life, because at last he'd somebody to play off of, somebody to feed off of. And if you take Chris Commons out of the element, saying, I like Chris Commons, I have to say, but I don't believe that I don't believe any player in that team that we've got right now in the squad is irreplaceable. And if any given one of them was to move on tomorrow and we brought a better player in, you wouldn't get a complaint from me. But at the moment, at this moment in time, Commons is our only outlet for creativity. And when you leave him out of the team, I can understand why he did it in the away leg. I don't have a problem in the away leg, but at Celtic Park, where we have a wee bit more open space, the crowd behind you, and that, you know, I think that was a major blunder, no playing Commons for the start. And I think what he could have done is, and it's really, this is might sound ultra critical, the boy McGregor has played well, yep. and he looks a fantastic prospect. But I just felt that if you'd have put Commons in for McGregor and just say to the boy, do you know something, son, you've done really well, you've got a big future here, but you're going to play most of the games this season, but this is a night for experienced men, and I need you know, just to get us over the line. And it was noticeable that when Commons came on, that there were so many players in the team looked happier, because they knew they could give him a ball and he could keep it, he can shield the ball, he invites a challenge for the back, he's always going to get free kicks.
I think the problem with Commons is
he just has a wee bit more brains than the rest of the team.
Yeah, but I think I'm not saying you're wrong or right. I'm just saying, I think from my looking at it, the reason why Commons is getting eased out is because Commons, I don't think, is capable of playing at the speed that Dialogue wants the team to play at.
No, but not everybody can play 100 miles an hour. I mean, if you look at the Lisbon Lions, they were probably the fittest Celtic team of all time. Their fitness levels, you know, I never saw them, but if you believe what you read, Neil Mochen and Jock Steen's training regime at that time had them the fittest team in Europe, probably. You saw that in 1967 when they destroyed Milan. But the whole thing is there was guys like Lennox and Johnson, who Stevie Chalmers, who were flying machines, really, really fit and fast and direct. But Bertie Auld wasn't the fastest, and neither was Bobby Murdoch, but they were in the team because they had brains, they had technique. And you can't have 11 players running about like roadrunners. You need to have somebody at times that can create, that can put their foot in the ball and have a mixture on the side. And without Commons, we don't have anything like that.
The problem is those players that you're talking about didn't play as far up the park as Commons does.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, for example, the other person who, for me, cannot play at the speed that Ronnie Dyla wants to play is Charlie Mulgrew.
Charlie's painful because I know a couple of guys that are ultra hypercritical of Charlie Mulgrew. And you know, I like Charlie Mulgrew because anywhere he plays, he gives 100%. You play him in left back, you play him at centre back, you play him in midfield, he always gives 100%. But the thing is, what manager of assault, really, and this includes Neil Lennon, and I like Neil Lennon, actually sat down and went, I've got a great idea. Why don't we play Charlie Mulgrew in midfield when he is clearly out of his depth as a midfield player? And sometimes it's painful watching it because he's a nice big guy. He's Celtic through and through. And I don't like to see any Celtic player playing and suffering in the park. And I just get the feeling that Charlie's suffering in it. And he's got to be taken out of it. And again, you have to, you know, cast doubts over the manager's decision making. If you have beat on Kyle and Johansson in midfield, who are all orthodox midfield players, and not bad players, I have to say, and you put Charlie McGrew in for any one of them, I just kind of see the logic in that.
Well, I can see the logic, particularly in the first leg, because of the way the system that he played, and that in effect, when we had the ball, we played almost with a back three, because they were giving us the ball. So our two centre-halves were going out quite wide. Our full-backs were pushing up. And effectively, Charlie McGrew was taking the ball and sitting between the two centre-halves and sort of dropping back almost. I jokingly tweeted this during the game, that he was a libero, but almost dropping back. It was almost as if he was playing a sort of a sweeper system.
Yeah, yeah. I understand that in the away game, but not Celtic Park.
What I thought at Celtic Park was, his tactic was, make sure we don't do anything stupid like lose an early goal. What I wondered for a period in the first half was if the players aren't fit enough yet to play the speed of football that Ronnie Dyer wants us to play. I actually thought maybe he said to them, play at a high tempo for 10 minutes, then sit back, give them the ball, keep your shape for 10 minutes, give yourselves a bit of a breather in the game, let the ball just be passed about in front of you, and then step back up again. Because after the first 10 minutes, we seemed to drop that. And then I was getting more and more anxious because I didn't think this was a tactic. And then for the last 10, 15 minutes of the second half, of the first half, Ronnie Dyla was out having a go at them on the touchline for the whole last 10, 15 minutes of the first half, telling them to push further up the park and to press the ball further up the park.
The other player that I would like to mention as well, who, I dread to say this because, again, he's a likeable wee guy, but I actually think that he shot his bolt now, is Izaguirre.
Yeah.
I thought he was awful the other night, and I actually felt at one point that Dyla would have been better putting Charlie McGrew to left back, because Charlie McGrew's a bit of muscle and a bit of height, and there was times as he was getting caught, the ball was going behind him, any time he got near the goal, he didn't want to take a man on. He just put corners in he put crosses in for far out, which made it easier for the defence to defend. And I haven't seen the goal on telly yet, and it's a bit of a blur. But he, I don't know what he was trying to do at the goal. Seriously.
Give a goal to Maribor. Because,
you know, the ball was fairly low, and I think he threw himself for a diving header. And you were thinking, what were you trying to achieve there? And then
literally the just before that goal, I had turned to my brother and said, I think we're going to lose a goal. Am I going to lose a goal because somebody's makes a stupid mistake? They then got the ball, went out the park, crossed it in. And at the time, I just remember thinking, when the ball went in the back of the net, why didn't we clear that? I've now watched it on the television, and it's just as you say, the cross comes in. Now, one of the things I remember being told, I first started playing football at under nine, and I was a goalkeeper, but it's the same principle. I remember being told, as a goalkeeper, but defenders are the same, if you're parrying the ball, if you can't hold on to the shot, you've got to push it out to the left or out to the right. Never, ever, ever
put
it back in the middle. So I was told that when I was nine, well, I was eight, because it was under nine. So I'm sure Izaguirre has been told that many times, and he is level roughly with the back post, and he heads the ball to the penalty spot.
I don't know what he was trying to do. I'm not saying that Izaguirre is a bad player because of one game. I just feel that probably, if you look at it deeply enough, he suffers through two, I think, not any competition. And I still can't believe that we're on the market for a left back.
Which
leads us on to new players as well, because
I
think the board stand accused as well, because we had a golden opportunity to qualify for the Champions League, and for the second year in a row, they sold one of our biggest assets before the qualifiers had finished. And Fraser Foster wouldn't have made a difference last night. I don't think he'd have saved that goal.
No.
But the point is, from a psychological point of view, any potential suitor should have been told, nobody leaves this club until we are either in the Champions League or out of the Champions League. And then, you know, I know it only leaves a couple of days, and it may actually be that you maybe get less money. But the focus should be that we had to get into the Champions League. And that's 2 years in a row they've done that, and it's criminal. And the other thing as well I have to say is, What is going on up there with a transfer policy when it's only loan players that are coming in?
Well, I know that. I know for a fact what that is. Because they know they ballsed up.
Brichter and Tukey and Baldy.
Uh-huh. And what's his face, the guy that Henrik Larsson allegedly recommended, I can't even remember his name.
Bangura. Mm.
They know they've ballsed up. So with the exception of Denier, although apparently they tried to get it in the contract, every one of those loan players has an option to buy price.
Right. Now, okay.
So I know that's this is what I know.
Mm-hmm. So that may be the case, but the thing is, though, from the supporters' point of view, where I'm looking at it, you're getting the money for the season tickets, you're getting the money for European games, you're going to get the money for the Europa League, which I appreciate isn't as much as you would get for the Champions League. You've got £10 million sitting there for Fraser Foster, and you've got probably, is it just over £1 million for Tony Watt?
Yeah, £1.5 million for Tony Watt, £10 million right. for Fraser Foster, and £5 million for the Commonwealth Games.
But that makes it even worse because I'd forgotten about the Commonwealth Games. So the point is, where is the money going and why are we not investing in the team? I understand what you're saying there about, okay, we've seen a couple of, I don't like to use derogatory terms, seen a couple of guys that didn't quite meet the standard that we were hoping. But, you know, it looks as if, and I'm not saying this is the case, that they're not giving Dial any money to spend because they're not 100% certain in his judgment. It looks to me as if it might be another, you know, we might go to Love Street one night and get beat 4-0 again, and you've got another Tony Mowbray scenario and we're looking for a new manager.
This is where I think the board have failed the new guy. Mm-hmm. Because I said earlier, what we don't know is whether they've had a conversation along the lines of, this is my philosophy in football, this is what I want to do, and it's not an overnight fix.
Mm-hmm.
And the board had turned around and said, we are 100% behind you because that's what we want, that cultural change in the club.
Mm-hmm.
But at that point, knowing that there could be a bumpy start, it's mm-hmm. their obligation to do whatever they can to minimise that bumpy start. So, if the manager comes in and says, so, point one, see all these fringe guys out the door because they're a waste of space.
Mm. I think that's the one thing we learned from Inverness last week is Ronnie Dyla actually discovered that we all knew that these guys are not good enough.
Yeah.
And boys like McGeoch and Twarv have been there for maybe 3 or 4 seasons now, and it's not happening.
Yeah.
And they haven't improved or they haven't developed the way that maybe 3 or 4 years ago we hoped that they were going to improve. And then you've got guys like Pookie, he just hasn't the heart for it. You've got Baldy didn't play. I appreciate that, but I think he's got 1 foot out the door. He's just clearly not up to the standard required either. And there was other guys last Saturday as well. Zaluska being a case in point, who, you know, that was an opportunity for them to put themselves in the shop window and getting the manager's good books. You know, if Celtic had went to Inverness, for example, and won 3-0, and it had been a scintillating performance, think how hard it would have been for Daly to pick his team on Wednesday night, because he would have had players banging at his door saying, look, I had a cracking game on Saturday, I scored 2 goals, I created another goal, or I saved a penalty, I'm bursting to get into this team, which is what we all want to see. But the truth of the matter is, we've got about 13, 14 players that you can pick for, and there's another 10 there that if they left them on, they wouldn't be missed.
Well, as part of the changing things, one of the things a couple of things I understand to be the case, which is what I suspected when they brought in Dyla and the language they were using around Dyla, which are, one, this is where I would criticise, we are still shopping around at the £2-3 million is mm-hmm. the top of our range budget.
Yeah, yeah.
And the problem is the rate that football inflation is going, a guy who 4 years ago was £3 million is now
20.
Yeah, £8 million or whatever, you know.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
That means that we're dropping down the market. So they appreciate that. So they want to start the first team having a smaller squad of bought-in players.
Mm-hmm.
So that instead of buying 3 £2 million players, we might buy 1 £5 million player.
Mm-hmm.
Which means we've got to bring in more of the youth. Because if you look at it, if you look at the top four teams who played Champions League football and last night, who got through, only Anderlecht get even close to our football budget.
I know.
So what are we doing wrong? Well, the difference is, see all these teams like Maribor and whatever, they, the bulk of their team is made up of players from that country.
Mm-hmm.
Or a large chunk of their team or their squad is made up of players from that country, and we mm-hmm. don't have Scottish players. Now, we could turn around and say, well, that's an indictment on Scottish football. I would then turn around and say, yeah, but how long's our academy been going at full pelt? Our academy's been going at full pelt now. And so in the last 4 or 5 years, we would expect to start seeing players coming through that academy.
Mm-hmm.
Granted McGregor, granted Forrest. But the fringe players who played at Inverness should have been, if our academy was working properly in the way that our pop four competitors'
mm-hmm.
systems are working, four or five of the guys, or five or six of the guys who played at Inverness on Saturday would have been products of our system.
Mm-hmm.
And you might not have been quite so critical of them because we hadn't wasted £2 million on them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I know that, and I know that one way around that is they are moving towards a system where, because, to use a phrase of my mates, you're going to kiss a few frogs when you're trying to do what we're doing, which is uncover mm-hmm. the hidden gem.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to go down the route of loan in more of those players with an option to buy so that we can try them out for a year, and if we don't like them, we can just get rid of them, like we did with Lassad.
We did that with Lassad, and we did it with Miku, and we had to move them on, because ultimately they were found not to be any better than we had. But then again, if you're looking at... I was looking at Tony Watt going to Standard Liège. Now, Standard Liège is, in Belgium, one of the bigger clubs, and they play a good level of football. Now, Ronnie Delia wouldn't have seen Tony Watt play before he sold him, seriously. And I find that a bit concerning. I think there's people above Delia making decisions for him, whether it's players going out the door or players coming in. And I think the part of the problem that we have, I don't know if it's John Park who's got a big influence. I don't know if it's Peter Lovell. Peter Lovell obviously has a big influence. But I don't know if he's maybe interfering in team affairs. But the fact that Watt was allowed to, I'm not saying Watt would have been the saviour that we're looking for. The only point I'm making is that as soon as he left, and I thought that's strange, because Daly has let him go without even seeing him play. I think he played one friendly game in was it St. Pauli or something like that. He wouldn't even have had him long enough to recognise him. And I thought that was telling that things were happening without Delia's say-so.
Well, as far as I'm aware, Lennon wanted to sell him because of his attitude problem and was persuaded to stick him out on loan
mm-hmm.
because the board had pretty sure that Lennon was leaving.
Yeah.
But obviously, Ronnie Dyla and John Collins were told he had John Collins mm-hmm. knew he had an attitude problem and were told he had an attitude problem, and he still showed the same attitude problem in training
mm-hmm.
and that's why he was punted out the door,
fair
as
enough.
Far as I'm aware. I can tell you the system Celtic have for signing players.
Mm-hmm.
John Park goes and... Right, so they have a scouting system with people who trawl through tapes and various things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gets narrowed down to some candidates, and then John Park goes and looks at those candidates.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I assume this will be the same, although it might not be, but the principle, certainly the way that it was under Lennon, the system was John Park goes and looks at him,
mm-hmm.
and Gary Parker goes and looks at him, or Gary Parker might go and look at him, and then John Park goes and looks at him. They then do a report on the two or three players. Then the manager, Neil Lennon or Ronnie Dyla, will either look at the videos of the player or preferably go and see him. And he will do a report. And then they give their scoring and rating system of the player and their appreciation of value of the player. And they might look, say they're looking at three players. So effectively they'll do some sort of scoring matrix, and the guy who's the lead player will be the guy that they say, right, okay, John Park's job is then to identify, I think we can get him for X. And since that's the sort of And the manager's scoring system gets the biggest weighting in the scoring matrix. So they get a score. So John Park then says, because he's done most of the research, I think we can get him for X. It's then Peter Lawwell's job to then go and get him for X. Peter Lawwell then reports back and says, right, I've done my initial inquiries and it does appear he's available for roughly X. Or Peter Lawwell comes back and says, so I believe this was the case in Finn Bogson, that so they went away, Lennon liked him, Gary Parker liked him, John Parks liked him, and they all gave their opinion as to what he was worth. And the consensus was he was about a £3 million player. And Peter Lawwell then came back and said, it's five. And apparently, if all three of them had said, well, actually, yeah, Lawwell would have gone for the five. And particularly, and even if one of the three had said, no, I don't think he is, but of the two who said he is, one of them was the manager, Peter Lawwell would have then still gone for the five. But apparently, Lennon liked him.
But not enough.
But not enough. And John Parks was adamant he wasn't a £5 million player.
The problem that Peter Lawwell's got at the moment is, I regard myself as a reasonable guy, and me and you have had discussions through the years about the spending of the club, how we have to be realistic, how we have to be live within our means, there has to be a budget, and there has to be realism when it comes to what we can spend and what we can't spend. And I've listened to this, and as I said, I'm a reasonable guy, and I listen to the argument, and by and large, I'm happy with that. I don't want to get into debt. I don't want to end up in a situation where the debt spirals and it causes the problems that you see at certain clubs. But the problem is now, we are sitting in the last couple of seasons in millions of pounds. And for where I'm sitting in this seat tonight, I don't see anything being reinvested in the team to a reasonable degree for the amount of money that we're bringing in. Now, if I feel like that, and I regard myself as a reasonable person, then Peter Law has got big problems. Because there's thousands of guys out there that will feel like me, and they'll say, do you know something? We know that you have a policy, we know that you have a way of doing things and a plan, and by and large it's working well and we're happy, we're successful. But right now at this moment in time, there's something sadly lacking up there when not a penny has been spent since the manager came to the club.
And that's where, getting back, my criticism would be, one, if you've got a manager who says, I want to change a culture, then it's beholden upon the board to fall over themselves to assist him get that change of culture in, which means get rid of the dross and get the new guys in. Also, if their system is, do you know what, see, because we bought shite in the past, what we're going to do is we're going to loan it, so that if it finds out that it's crap, we can get rid of it. And if it's good, we've got an option to buy.
Yeah, I understand the logic, but also understand...
But then they should explain that system.
There's players out there who you won't get on loan that you need to pay up front and get. Quality footballers in certain positions.
But my point being...
For example, a goal scorer.
Yeah, but if they explained that system and said, this is what we're doing, we would at least have more understanding of, well, they are backing Ronnie Dyler, they're just doing a new system. And my final thing, see the analogy I just gave, the story I just gave you about the Finn Bogson, and we don't think he's worth £5 million. Maybe their perception of market value of a striker is too low, and that's the problem. You know, when I was told this story, I gave an example back saying, so that's a bit like, say you lived in an area all your life and you knew that houses in that area were always a certain price, and then you moved away and about 3-4 years later you heard of somebody paying double the price that you always thought houses were worth in that area. You'd turn around and say, what an idiot, houses are never worth that price there. See, if the second and the third and the fourth house in that area then went for that price, you might still be thinking, I could never live there for that money. But you know what? The world's changed and you're wrong. Because if people are paying that price, that's what the price is. And maybe part of our problem is in not getting the striker is everybody plays a system, or the most favoured systems at the moment are 4-4-1, 4-2-3-1 and 4-3-3. But they all have the focus around a central guy who can hold the ball up and can do all the things that we are looking for in a striker. Basically, everybody's looking for it. And so when everybody's looking for the same thing, it becomes more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe part of our problem is, you know, because every AGM, the board stand up and say, we are prepared to spend money. We're not spending money. It's just we can't get the players we want at the price.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe we're paying the wrong price.
I know.
Maybe the problem is, you don't think Finn Bogson's a £5 million player. Actually, Finn Bogson is a £5 million player because Real Sociedad or Athletic Bilbao?
Yep, Sociedad, that's right. Yeah.
Who ended up paying £8 million for him.
I know.
So I say a £5 million was his price tag.
What made me sad the other day was my son found a DVD and it was the game against Spartak Moscow at Celtic Park maybe about 7 or 8 years ago, which was the Champions League qualifier. And he was asking about it, and I put it on and I said, you know something? That's one of the best experiences I've ever had as a Celtic fan at a European game. It was a phenomenal game. It was two teams that gave their all. It was so close. It went to penalty kicks, and we just edged it at the end. And I looked at the Spartak Moscow team, and the guys like Pavlyuchenko, and I think there's a guy called, was it Mozart? It was a striking midfield player. And the Piotrowska, whatever the goalkeeper's name is, is he Czech or Polish?
Yeah, I can't remember.
Now, there was another few players in that team as well that I'd heard that get moved to England. I just can't remember off the top of my head. And I thought, what an achievement that was for us to take a team of that. You know, they'd spent millions and millions and millions, far more than we ever spent. And yet we took them on that night and we gave as good as we got and we beat them. And it actually hit home to me now that there's no way we could compete at that level anymore. You know, like the board have, when you're in the Champions League and you're playing the qualifiers of the teams that we are playing, with the income that we have and what we spend in wages, it's not unreasonable to think that we should be getting the Champions League every year. Because when you're playing teams like Helsingborg and Helsinki and Karagandy and Legia Warsaw and Maribor, these are teams who, with all due respect to them, we should be looking to, we should have a really good chance of beating. And that really gutted me the other night that we didn't have in us to beat a team like Maribor, who I accept were the best team in the night. I'm not taking away anything from the fact that they were deserving winners, but that makes it all the more gone that we have this infrastructure and we have the fan base and we have the turnover, and yet we're underperforming.
The very fact that we have the highest wage bill of the top four teams indicates to me that we are overspending on lots of people's wages.
Yeah.
Which means the only way to, if that's the only way to get the people that we have of our current ability, it means we need to do a much better job of getting our development players through the system, because either there's an intrinsic problem in that all Scottish people are now being born crap footballers, or we are not, which I don't believe in that theory. So the other option is we are not developing those people properly to become first team footballers for Celtic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, one of the positives that I've heard is that the coaching staff for the levels below the first team are all very pleased so far with the input they've had from Ronnie Dyla, because he's behaving like a head coach in terms of he's the head of the coaching staff at every level in Celtic. So that he's interacting with them to talk about the style of play that he wants every level of Celtic to play, so that players move from one level to the next, playing the same style of system to then move into the first team. Unlike Neil Lennon, who they weren't criticising him as a coach, I don't think. I think they were just saying that Neil Lennon was solely focused on making sure that he won next week and the week after and the week after. And he did come and look at the the under-20s and under-19s on occasion, but it was principally to see if there was any player capable of moving up rather than having ongoing detailed dialogue with the coaches at a later level about the style of play that he wants them to be playing and taking an interest in that. Gordon, Tony Mowbray wasn't there long enough and was a bit weak. Gordon Strachan apparently had a bit of interest in what they were doing and trying to do that, but sort of lost focus. And Martin Neil had no interest other than the first team because he wanted to buy in success. That's the feedback I've heard.
My worry about Ronnie Dyer, the worry is that we go to Dens Park on Sunday and see to say for some quirk of fate, we get beat 2-1.
Yep.
That's three defeats in a row and you can imagine the reaction in the newspapers. There's always going to be a knee-jerk element of the Celtic support which exists.
Yeah.
And you wonder if the board will hold their nerves. I'm not saying he's going to get sacked, not for a minute, claiming that he's going to get sacked in September. But if he struggles along maybe to Christmas, New Year, and we either aren't leading the table or we're maybe faltering a wee bit, maybe just ahead and be no more, then people will start to say, well, you know, Lennon won it by 30 points. He scored 100 goals in the process. And I just hope that... you know, everybody holds their nerve and they stick to the plan that they have so that they give the man as much support as possible.
Well, we're the only show in town for the media. So you're right. I mean, that's my biggest concern. I'm not saying that Ronnie Dyler is going to be the greatest, you know, this great manager. Somebody put it quite well to me earlier today. We're invested in him because he's saying what we want to hear from the Celtic manager in terms of the style of play, which means if he achieves what he wants to achieve, we'll be delighted because we're getting the style of play we want in the park. So it's in everybody's interest that he's a success, because if he's a success, we'll be having fantastic football. So I want all of that. However, I always remember John Barnes talking about when he lost his job. It was about a year after he'd left Celtic. And he said what he didn't realise until after he'd left Celtic was, when he first started getting criticism as Celtic manager, he thought, that's not the end of the, from the media, he thought, it's not the end of the world because I'm trying to achieve a certain style of football in the park and I'm sure the people going to games will see that. And he said what he realised afterwards was, it's not the people going to the games that starts the problem. It's the hundreds of thousands of Celtic fans who don't go to the games.
Yeah, yeah.
Who get to see highlights in the odd live game, but their main feedback about the performance of the team comes from the way that they're reported in the media. So if that starts to be really, really negative, they will then phone-ins and write on the media, and I'm sure nowadays it'll be on social media, and that then encourages the media to talk even more about how more negatively because it's generating copy for them. Which then reinforces to these people that things are rubbish. And then very quickly, if every single day the people go... Now, I'm not saying that things were great under Barnes, but you get the point I'm making.
Yeah, yeah.
Very quickly, the people who go to the games, even if we have an okay performance and get a draw, well, this is just more crap. Because they're being told every day that it's crap. And he said it was only afterwards he realised how quickly that turned into a downward spiral. I remember hearing that thinking, yeah, because actually, he won manager there a month in December. We lost at home to Hearts and he got booed off the park. We then lose to Inverness and he loses his job.
See, to be fair, the Hearts game, we lost a 2-goal lead.
Yeah.
That's pretty bad.
So but the point... The point being how quick that turned around.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, there was, you know, as I say, I'm not saying it was perfect, but in terms of his point about how quickly it can start to go once the media are completely against you. And that, I agree with you, that's my concern about... you saw that with Paul Le Guin. I mean, I always feared if Paul Le Guin was a success at Rangers because he was... If Paul Le Guin had been a success, they wouldn't have gone bust. Because the whole thing about Paul Le Guin was changing the culture from a buying culture into the same, similar language to Ronnie Dyler, actually. The players need to be fitter, they need to have a better diet, and we should be bringing our youngsters through because we get the best youngsters in the country. And then he made the bad signings of the likes of Sebo, and he put Scott, what's his face, Barry Ferguson on the transfer list.
And Chris Boy was it as well.
And because they were going against mm-hmm. what he wanted on the diet side of things. And they were media mates. And mm-hmm. it turned against him. And I agree with you, Dundee could be a big game for him. I felt on Tuesday night, I thought the team actually in the first half looked nervous.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was our problem. We actually looked nervous. And
I know.
Anyway, that's the where we are. If you want to look for the positives are we've still got European football.
Correct.
And the other positives are you get the same coefficient points for a win in the Europa League that you do in the Champions League.
Which has always been a bugbear of mine, to be honest.
Yeah, I think there should be three-quarter points.
Or
half points.
But maybe you should get double the points for winning a Champions League game that you do for the Europa League game to take into account the better quality opposition, especially from our point of view. It used to really irritate me that I think everybody goes on. There's a website called Bert Cassis.
Yes.
Who does that fantastic thing that he does, where it tells you the countries and the teams and the orders that come in and who plays who and what each team goes into. And it's really great stuff. And it used to annoy me and there was a period at Newcastle or something like seventh in Europe.
Uh-huh.
Coefficient points. Because they get in the UEFA Cup every year and they go to the quarterfinals. And they get beat. As soon as they play anybody half decent, they get put out.
Yep.
And it killed me that even Spurs, each year getting to this Europa League, because they finish fifth or sixth in the league, or they win the League Cup, they get into the Europa League, and they're probably in the top 20, maybe even the top 15 clubs in Europe for coefficient points, and you think, that can't be right. Neither can. If you're in the Premier competition, playing at the highest level, there has to be an acknowledgement that if you win a game there, that it's harder than winning a game in the Europa League. But I'm not decrying the Europa League, because I think we've got a problem in this country, and I think since the advent of the Champions League in place of the European Cup, there's almost like certainly we have it in this country that they look down their nose at the Europa League, and that shouldn't be the case. And there's two things, and you touched on one there. We need coefficient points desperately, because if we're still to get into these Champions League qualifiers, you need to keep the coefficient high in order to play teams of a reasonable standard to give you a better chance to get through. And the other thing as well is, seriously, if you go to the games as we do you really want a full season of domestic football without something to keep it going?
Exactly. And, I mean, I think part of the problem in our last round of Europa League games, again, we got into the Europa League because of the admin error to do with Sion.
Yeah.
Consequently, the games were already drawn, or the setup was already known before we went in. So mm-hmm. we had two home games at 6 o'clock last time. We had three mm-hmm. games, two of them were at 6 and one was at 8. Mm-hmm. So hopefully this time, our three games will be at 8 o'clock.
Yep.
And actually, there's some pretty decent teams that could make for some groups that would be really exciting to be part of.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we'll be a Pot 2 team. And I say, as I'm speaking to you, you were saying about Bert's website. I've got Bert's website in front of me, but some of this is changing in that I think Lyon are out.
Did Lyon get put out?
Aye.
I'm surprised at that.
I need to check. Reading people's... So
I know Real Sociedad get put out tonight.
Real Sociedad are out, which is a bit of a reality check for Aberdeen.
Mm-hmm.
Lyon are out. Unfortunately,
I wonder how Mr. Finn Bogson feels.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, St Etienne appear to be out, because I thought that might have been nice if, because St Etienne are a Pot 4 team. And I think mm-hmm. that if the chance of getting them are 1 in 8 or whatever it is. But one of my earliest memories of foreign European fans was actually the European Cup final of 76.
Yeah.
So I remember being in a car with my mum and we were going through, we were in Pollockshaws Road, and it just being absolutely mobbed, and I had no idea, and it was all these green and white scarves, and I was confused thinking there was a Celtic game on that I didn't know about.
Well, I remember that for a similar reason. My pal's big brother, who was in secondary school at the time, he was only in primary, and he went up the town and swapped his Celtic scarf for a St Etienne scarf, and it was a beauty. I think it's what they call jacquard. It's like squares.
Oh, yes, uh-huh.
You know, and it was squared, and it says, Allez, le vert, you know,
yeah.
in French. And in those days, you didn't have the same access to replica kits and souvenirs and that kind of thing is what you get now. And you certainly didn't get to see foreign teams very often, is what you do now in satellite television that we all have. So there was something fairly exotic about these foreigners that were coming to Glasgow, and it was a European Cup final, but more so, there was these fans that were coming for the Germans were in red and white, and the French were in green and white. And obviously, the green and white thing, we were always going to favour the French because they were our colours. But I'll never forget my pal's big brother had a scarf, and I just had never seen anything like it. It was fantastic one.
Well, in terms of who we could possibly... I did think there was a possibility of a group of revenge in that we could have had Inter Milan, Celtic, Rapid Vienna and Legia Warsaw.
A Legia Warsaw pot four?
They're a pot four team. We're a pot two team. I know.
I wouldn't go for that. I don't want...
No, I don't want to play
Vienna
them.
Or Legia Warsaw.
No, well, Rapid Vienna are out.
Oh, they're out? Oh, yeah. Well. Yeah, that's always a good sign.
So. Yeah, it might be interesting to play a Ukrainian team, and there's two.
Is Atletico Madrid in it, Harry?
Well, the teams I will go through as it's on Bert's website, but some of these have changed, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So Seville, Lyon, but I believe Lyon are
out.
Right. Tottenham Hotspur. I'm just checking with what the Spurs situation is. Where are we? Yeah, Spurs are through. PSV Eindhoven, Napoli, Dynamo Kiev, Villarreal, 20 Enschede, Fiorentina, Salzburg, and
well, they're Fiorentina. It's another team that you can have back to the glory days. Celtic beating away to Milan in 1970. And PSV Eindhoven is a team that we've never played. Now, there isn't many of the big European teams who we haven't played yet. I think if we drew PSV, that would be our first. I don't think we've played them yet.
So that's pot one. As I say, I'm not quite sure. In fact,
tell me this though: how high are we in pot two? Because
we are middle of pot. We are. There's one. That's what I was just working out. Thessalonica, Standard Liège, Dow Bucharest, Copenhagen and Lille are above us. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 teams above us. And we know that...
So Lille, Tony will actually get a transfer to a team at a greater coefficient than either.
By 0.5 of a coefficient point. And so we know that Lyon are out of it.
Yeah.
And who else did we say?
Sociedad.
Aye, so... Although they're... Real Sociedad are a lower coefficient than us, I think. So that's Lille up into pot one. Then there's us, and then it's pot three. That means Sparta Prague have moved up into our pot, and possibly Borussia Mönchengladbach. So pot three's got Borussia Mönchengladbach. But if two teams from pot one or two are out, we kind of get them.
Yeah,
Everton.
Yeah.
Real Sociedad, Real Sociedad were pot three, so they're out. Dynamo Zagreb, Lokomotiv Moscow, Rapid Vienna out, FC Zurich, Nacional Funchal, Maccabi Tel Aviv, and Tiraspol, Sheriff Tiraspol.
Yeah.
And then I think Hull are out.
Hull are out? They
drew two each, so I think Lockerin are through.
Yeah, Lockerin won one on the first leg.
Yeah, so they're through in away goals. Estoril wouldn't be a bad trip to Portugal. Legia Warsaw, Partizan Belgrade, that was another revenge game.
Yeah.
If we were getting a group of revenge, Torino, Feyenoord, Sanetti,
and Feyenoord in pot four.
Feyenoord in pot four.
But there's a bash for the past as well, you know. So that would be a big game. Yeah.
Sanetti, Rio Ave, Dynamo Moscow, Slovan Bratislava, and Alborg.
Did you say Estoril are in top four?
Yep.
Tell you a story about that. As you know, I'm doing the book about 1979 at the moment, and that was a terrible winter that year, where Celtic didn't play a game for 10 weeks.
Yep.
And in the middle of that 10-week period, Billy McNeil was going daft trying to get a game or even training conditions in a warmer climate. And we ended up travelling over to play Estoril in a friendly, and we beat them 4-0. And I've been talking to a few of the players at the period, guys like David Proven, Mike Conroy, Peter Latchford, who were playing then. And every one of them, Bobby Lennox is another guy I was speaking to recently, and every one of them is adamant that trip to Portugal was the catalyst that they brought that team together. Because when they went on that trip, there was a lot of new... Murdoch McLeod had just arrived, and Davy Proven had just arrived. Guys like Conroy and Sneddon had came to the juniors and were still very young. Even guys like Tommy Burns and Roy Aitken in many ways were just pups. Bobby Lennox had come back to America, so there was all these different... You know, there was all these new faces that had arrived in a short space of time. And every one of the players is adamant that when they went to Estoril and they got the training facilities, and at night time, Billy McNeil let them off the leash a wee bit, and they all maintained that was the catalyst that for that great team that we had in the late 70s and 80s, when Proven and McLeod and Tommy Burns, Roy Aitken, Danny McGrain, and it was noticeable that every one of them spoke very highly of that trip. So that would be funny if we get Estoril as well, because Davy Proven said to me that... that was the first time that the first time that McNeil and Clark had been back to Lisbon since the European Cup win, and they actually stayed in the same hotel as what the team did in Lisbon, and that was in Estoril.
Maybe he had that essence, that magic essence.
There's something in the air, obviously, that Estoril. That's a funny one, because my knowledge of Portuguese football at the moment isn't a great deal. In fact, it's probably non-existent. But I'm actually surprised. I never had Estoril as being as high up as that in the Portuguese league. I had them as being maybe a relegation fighting team in the lower reaches of their top division. I'm actually surprised to hear that. But see, in terms of glamour, if you're saying there's Inter Milan, right? Mm-hmm. Give me a team in pot three that you think would be glamorous.
Everton.
Inter Milan, Everton, and Feyenoord.
Yep.
I mean, good grief, that is absolutely fantastic if it comes to that. And you've mentioned a whole range of teams in there that I've got great respect for. And I think in this country, in the league that we play in, and the standard of football that we watch, you're going to watch teams. It frustrates me a wee bit, because she's a Celtic fan growing up. We were great students of the European game, especially when Big Jock was manager. And in those days, we weren't spoiled, as I've said already. You couldn't sit in your house on a Saturday night, switch the Sky on, and watch Barcelona and Real Madrid. So there was something, again, a wee bit exotic about seeing these foreign teams that came to Parkhead, and there were big occasions. Even if it didn't need to be the European Cup, it could have been the Cup Winners' Cup, or it could have been the UEFA Cup. But we had great respect for the opposition, we had great respect for the competition, and there was a great excitement about something new and getting to see a foreign team, a team from another country, another style, another sort of culture. And I think we need to start getting that back. Too many of us are looking down their nose at the Europa League.
Yeah.
And I'm pleased to be in it. Not pleased to be in it at the expense of the Champions League, but, you know, it's as I said to you there, the thought of playing a year of domestic football in this country, with the greatest respect to other teams, I don't mean to be condescending, without European football would be a killer.
Yeah, and I think, as you say, maybe European football just used to sound be more sexy and exciting, just because you'd never heard of any of these, you know, not never heard of them. You'd know any foreign team was exotic, because you just never saw them play. You didn't know what they were going to be like. The very fact that in the top five leagues, the top four teams go away and play Champions League football is one of the things that, certainly from the English media perspective, is the reason why they look down on the Europa League.
But do you not find the English attitude funny? Because you get a manager such as, well, I'm trying to think of an example here, I think Bolton get into it 1 year. And Allardyce was a Bolton manager, and he said, this is the greatest achievement in this club's history, European football coming to Bolton. And then, see when it came to playing in the Europa League, he put out fringe teams for every game. Because then he changed his mind and he says, well, the most important thing is that the Premiership, we've got a big game against Liverpool and Man United, therefore, I'm only going to play at a fringe team. I don't get that. They fight like hell to get into the competition, and then when they get into it, they decry it.
Yeah, and I think it's very, very dismissive of what football fans actually want. I remember it might have been a Newcastle or a Middlesbrough fan or somebody, maybe it was Portsmouth. Anyway, it's one of these teams who continually never win anything. Phoning up Five Live once and talking about the fact that getting to see their team in Europe was one of the greatest things they'd ever seen as a football fan, and they didn't want their manager to then go in and do as you've just said and play some lesser team. And as you say, they push to try and get into Europe, and then when they get it, they bemoan that they're in it. When, much as I'd prefer to play Champions League football, and of course, you know, if my granny had a beard, she'd be my uncle, or auntie had a beard, she'd be my uncle type statement that I'm about to make. However, for some time, there's been a part of me that thought, would it be the end of the world if we dropped into the Europa League? Subject to being able to win the games, obviously. But then actually getting decent coefficient points and pretty much the principle of when we dropped into the UEFA Cup under Martin O'Neill. Now, I'm not saying that we're going to go and win or get to the final.
No, but what an adventure that was. Mm-hmm.
At a different, just being different. And as I say, for some time I've thought to myself, actually, not to get into Europa League this way, but would it be the end of the world instead of us hoping that we can get second in a Champions League group, would it actually be the end of the world for us to finish third, drop into the Europa League after the qualifying stages? Maybe even win a couple of those rounds.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if we were in the Europa League and actually qualify for European football after the new year, which is always another big boost, and it keeps the season going and keeps the interest going as well?
Well, that's... If I want to try and finish after the negative week that we've had, if I want to try and finish... So this podcast no more than about an hour. If I want to try and finish in a positive, that would be fantastic if we can achieve that.
So have a wee look at your pots again there and tell me, who do you think would be the easiest team in pot one?
Oh.
In your opinion?
It's difficult.
If you had to pick one, who would you pick?
Salzburg.
And then pot one?
Yeah.
Oh, gee. What about pot three?
Now, I don't know the Salzburg position. I think Salzburg have dropped in because they got... I'm just looking at... I think they've dropped in because they get beat last night or the night before.
Right.
So they're definitely in.
Okay.
20 Enschede that I mentioned earlier, they're out.
They're
out.
Who's the easiest team in pot three?
Pot three, looking at who it's likely to be. I think Estoril might now be a pot three team.
Okay, so Salzburg, Estoril, and pot four.
Pot four. Aalborg.
So Salzburg, Estoril, and Aalborg, wouldn't they be very glamorous in terms of maybe attendances? Wouldn't they be as many as you would get for your Intermans and stuff? But wouldn't it be a great opportunity to get coefficient points?
Well, that's exactly what I'm thinking.
Because see the season we got to Seville, we lived off that for years.
Yeah.
And that actually got Gordon Strachan, and I'm sure, but did he not get a pot two at one point?
Yeah.
In the Champions League? And they got him automatic, to be fair, Rangers were in the go at that time, and they were punching a good weight in Europe. So between the two of, we were getting to the stage that the Scottish champions were getting automatic qualification into the Champions League. That's not likely to happen again because we are the only ones that are flying the flag, if you like.
But like you say, subject to, and anybody listening to this, I fully appreciate it's subject to us being able to play in a way that looked better than we did against Maribor the other night. But subject to that, if you got a group like that and we won it, how fantastic would that be by the time we get to Christmas?
Absolutely.
On the other hand, you see, there's a part of me doesn't. Do you know the one type of group I don't want? I don't want a group that's not sexy, but it's very hard.
Yeah, I know. Maybe like Eastern European teams, and I don't know what you mean.
I don't want a group that is
maybe like a Turkish team, an Eastern European team, and a Greek team.
Yeah, like I'm just trying to think. Not that I'm but Napoli now. Italian football, but they're not the sexiest Italian football team in terms of. Well, and then Locomotive.
Are they not getting somebody quite famous up front? Who did they sign again? They've got a striker now, and I remember thinking, I wonder who they get him.
Do you know? Do you know what could be?
The Morientes or something? It's not Morientes.
I can't think. But do you know what could be an interesting group if it happened? Dynamo Kiev, Celtic, one of the Moscow teams or one of the Russian teams.
Oh dear. Because Kiev, obviously Kiev are Ukrainian.
Yeah, Dynamo Kiev, Lokomotiv Moscow, Celtic, and somebody else.
Do you know another thing you want to avoid as well? I'm not being funny here. If it's an Israeli team,
Maccabi Tel Aviv get knocked out.
Yeah, did they get knocked out? Because there's a bit of baggage. I don't think you would be allowed to play in Israel at the moment anyway. They would need to move that.
We
to
play
Cyprus.
It in Cyprus, aye.
Yeah.
And as you say, whatever the rights or wrongs, I absolutely know that we would end up getting a fine because we'd have a lot of Palestinian flags.
Aye.
Much as that shouldn't be a fine. I'm just talking from a reality perspective.
Mm-hmm. But I hope we avoid Leeds or Warsaw and Rapid Vienna, because reopening old stores is a great thing, and I think we just let that pass. But it would be great if we get a, you know, even Fiorentina, I think an Italian team, we haven't played one of them for a while. I think the last one was Udinese.
So we'll see.
It would be nice to, PSV would be a good draw, because it's a fairly glamorous tie, and it's easy to get to. It's not too far to travel.
Yeah, in fact, when I went on the official Celtic trip to the Ajax game in 2001, obviously, we flew in to Eindhoven Airport.
Mm-hmm.
It makes Prestwick look like Heathrow.
Really?
Aye.
You tiny thing.
Tiny, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we'll see. That's the finish in a positive. So we've got Dundee.
Can I say one thing before we go?
Yes.
The League Cup draw was made today, and I don't know the great scheme of things. The League Cup isn't anything that matters a great deal. But BBC are going to show Celtic against Hearts live. Now, Dundee and Dundee United are playing. I think it's at Tannadice.
Yep.
It would have been a full house, and I've watched a few of Dundee derbies in the last maybe 10 years or so. They're great. Adverts for the Scottish game, rip roaring, good old fashioned derby games. Played it, you know, like a cup tie fervour, and obviously this is a cup tie, so it would be even more exciting. Now Celtic and Hearts, see, would be the greatest will in the world. You're lucky if you get 15,000 that night.
Yeah.
It'll be a desperate atmosphere. What is there to be gained to putting that on the telly? Who actually sat down and said, "This is a great idea. Come on, we'll show Celtic and Hearts at the expense of Dundee Derby, which would have been a guaranteed full house and an exciting game to watch." I would have watched the Dundee Derby, seriously, because it would have been a good product.
Do you know what? I'm totally dismayed
at who made that decision.
Do you know why I think somebody made that decision? Because somebody looked and thought, Hearts are doing well in the Championship, Celtic are struggling under Ronnie Dyler, we may get a shock.
Yeah, well, maybe so.
I think they paid a disservice to
one of the best games in the Scottish calendar. So
no, I agree with you, and then I think they'd kick off 7:15.
Mm-hmm. Which is another pain.
Yeah. Which will increase the likelihood of the score that you just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Of the attendance rather that you just talked about.
Yeah.
Anyway, got a game on Saturday against Dundee.
Yep.
Rumours are getting on Twitter that we will have a striker signed tomorrow.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I believe it when I see it. So what's your thoughts?
On the striker or on the game?
On the game.
On the game, I think we're in for a hard game, because I think Hartley's got them fired up, and they seem to be their performances so far, for what I can gather, they're a hard working team, and he's got a work ethic in there. And they've signed a few fairly experienced players by Scottish standards. And I don't think there's any doubt that they'll do quite well this season. And I think Hartley is one of the managers who's on the rise. I think in the next couple of years, if he keeps progressing, he'll maybe move on to bigger things. But I'm still confident that if he brings Commons back into the team, because we desperately need him, and again, until we get somebody better, then we need to play the best players that we have.
And I am hoping for a performance more like the Dundee United performance.
Yeah,
you see the Dundee United at half time. Dundee United were knackered. They were absolutely shattered at half. We had run them off the park. So here's hoping. What are you going to go for the score?
Well, I think the away games will be better to watch this season, because Dundee, obviously, with the home fans behind them, they'll come out a wee bit, and the system that Dyla plays, that'll suit us a wee bit. It'll be an end-to-end game, you know, whereas I think where we'll struggle this season is at Celtic Park when teams put 10 men behind the ball, because, as I said earlier, they don't have any creativity. But I'm looking for a winning Saturday, and sorry, Sunday, and I would go for 2-0 Celtic.
Okay, I hope you're... Well, I hope the only reason you're wrong is because we've scored more. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
and I'm looking forward to the Europa draw tomorrow, very much.
Yeah, so am I. You know, it's the past in the past. Let's look forward.
Yeah.
All right, St. Anthony, thanks for that, and I'll speak to you later.
Okay, pleasure, Harry.
Hey, cheers. I won't laugh at you when you boo-hoo-hoo, 'cause I love you. I can turn my back on the things you like, 'cause I love you. I just like the things you do. Well, as I said at the beginning, I hope you didn't find that too negative. We were trying to find some positives. It's the modern sport ethos, after all. Let's look at the positives that come out of this. We've got the Europa League. Never done it for a while. Let's see what the draw brings. Hopefully, it's a draw that we can get through. Hopefully, it's a draw that has a bit of glamour. Hopefully, it's all of those. And hopefully, the team starts to play better and better every single game. There's a lot of hope in that. I know. I appreciate that. Speak to you later. Good night. Good night.
You